The Tom Woods Show, episode 1451.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you believe in homeschooling, but you also believe in not running yourself ragged and in maintaining your mental health, then you need the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum, for which I made 400 videos on history and government. Get it from me, and I'll throw in three exclusive, unbelievable bonuses you can't get anywhere else. How do you get it through me? Head over to ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I think a short episode today, but I just couldn't resist making this episode because of the feedback I got from the issue of my newsletter I sent out the other day. I wrote something up on a topic I found interesting, but that I thought would be fleeting and, you know, would give people momentary pleasure and then that'd be it. But I had so many requests for a follow-up on it that I decided, what the heck, I'll do an episode on it. Now, obviously, needless to say, you should be on my email list because you get wonderful, fun, interesting things like this all the time. So you can get on the list and also get a really, really darn good ebook. My AOC ebook is really good. I mean, these are arguments your friends have just never heard before. So AOCiswrong.com. It's about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Goes through all her major positions and just smashes them. Just smashes them. As I know there are some of you out there, I know, who in your heart of hearts, you know she's wrong about A, B, C, and D. But superficially, A, B, C, and D sound so plausible to a lot of people. And it's not easy to refute some of them. At least to the satisfaction of her supporters. But it's a lot easier after you read that book, and it don't cost you nothing. So AOCiswrong.com gets you that book, plus you hop on my list. Well, anyway, here's what I was talking about yesterday. And with thanks to Phil Magnus, the historian I've had on before, at least once, who's been doing excellent work on this. He wrote an article on it for AIER, the American Institute for Economic Research. And he's also had some good material on his Facebook page related to it. And it has to do with a court case pending that involves the University of Missouri. And you almost can't believe what these people did. The story runs as follows. There's a fellow named Sherlock Hibbs who died all the way back in 2002. And he set aside $5 million to endow some professorships at the University of Missouri. And the idea was that up to three chairs and up to three additional professorships would be drawn from this money. And the stipulation was that these professors had to promote the study of the Austrian School of Economics. Now, virtually everybody listening to my podcast knows what the Austrian School of Economics is. It has nothing to do with Austria per se. It's a school of thought, like the Chicago School of Economics. It has nothing to do with the economics of Chicago, obviously. The Austrian school has, particularly in the tradition of Ludwig von Mises, and we'll get to that part of the story in a minute, has distinctive positions on things like economic method. Just first of all, even what the epistemological status of economic laws is. That is to say, do we conclude certain things about how the economy works based on long-time observation of various economies or by deduction? In other words, do we proceed in economics the way we proceed in physical sciences or the way we proceed in geometry? So that's one thing. That's something that differentiates the Austrians even from the Chicago school, which is more or less free market. But also the Austrians have distinctive positions on the business cycle, on capital and capital theory, on prices and price formation, on value theory, on just a whole bunch of things, just the whole gamut. So it's not very difficult to pick out which economists are working in the tradition of Austrian economics and which are not. Also, in the Misesian tradition, it's distinctly non-mathematical. The hyper-mathematization of economics is not a development that was greeted with particular warmth by people like Mises or Murray Rothbard. So it's not very difficult to spot somebody working in the tradition of Mises. And in particular, the will of Sherlock Hibbs specified that these positions need to go to, and these are the words drawn from the bequest, dedicated and articulate disciples of Ludwig von Mises. So, the university is presented with this gift. Now, if the university believes that this type of requirement attached to the gift is an undue infringement on academic freedom, then it had an obligation to say so at the time. You can't take the money and then have mental reservations about the legitimacy of the requirements of the grant. You can't do that. Either you indignantly refuse the money on, I don't know, academic freedom grounds or something, or you accept it and abide by the stipulations. Now, there was a provision in there that said that if the University of Missouri fails to observe the demands of the that are attached to the money, then Hillsdale College would get the money. The money would be transferred to Hillsdale College, where he trusted that they would live up to the stipulations. Now, Hillsdale College, for those of you who don't know, has long had a reputation for being sympathetic to free market views. And in fact, Hillsdale is where Bob Murphy, who's my co-host on the podcast Contra Krugman, and who's an outstanding economist. Of course, you know I'm a big fan of Bob's and been friends with him for a very long time. Bob got his undergraduate degree at Hillsdale College, and he even taught undergraduates there for several years. So that's what's going on. Well, how well did the University of Missouri live up to the requirements? Well, it's starting to come to light that the answer is not very well. Okay, not very well. So at the time that the university issued a press release about it, that is 2003, they didn't hide from the stipulations in the bequest. Instead, in a press release, they used these words, that they said that the donation was in, quote, support of three chairs and three professorships, emphasizing the philosophy and tenets of the Austrian School of Economics. They took the money and then used it to hire faculty. And these faculty are not even in the economics department. They specialize in management and marketing. Not one appears to have a research interest that has anything whatsoever to do with Austrian economics or Mises in particular. And in fact, Phil did a scholarly search on the works of these people, could not find one reference to Mises in any of their work. These are supposed to be dedicated and articulate disciples of Mises. Couldn't find one reference. So now Hillsdale College, arguing that this is a violation, obviously, of the terms of the original endowment, is suing the University of Missouri. Because, of course, Hillsdale is entitled to the money if the University of Missouri does not live up to the requirements. So now here's where it gets kind of fun. Now, some of you listening follow the Mises Institute and the Austrian School pretty closely. So if I were to list some faculty who have taught at the Mises Institute, a lot of you would have heard the names. And a lot of you would have heard of Austrian economists who are, let's say, outside the orbit of the Mises Institute, but nevertheless are working broadly considered within the Austrian tradition. You would have heard their names. So let's go down the list of people teaching at University of Missouri and try and think as you hear these names about all the contributions to Austrian economics that you can recall them making. Richard A. Johnson, Daniel B. Turbin, Lisa K. Shear, Stephen P. Ferris, Rhonda K. Rager, and Marcia Richens. Any one of these people ring a bell to you? I've never heard of them, and I do this for a living. I mean, I have a sort of an obligation to have heard of them. I have no idea who these people are. So here's what we've got here. I'm going to read to you in a minute what the dean said in 2006 about how they're going to handle this. It's just, they caught them red-handed. But he wrote this letter to indicate, that this is the dean of the business school. It's at the University of Missouri, and he writes, he says, the undersigned faculty members are current holders of chairs or professorships associated with Mr. Sherlock Hibbs's endowment or held one of the positions for some length of time between 2014 and 2018. We attest that consistent with the stipulation in the will of Mr. Hibbs, each of us believes we are, quote, a dedicated and articulate disciple of the free and open market economy, the Ludwig von Mises Austrian School of Economics. We further attest that through our individual and collective activities, we have demonstrated a commitment to and have promoted numerous principles associated with the Austrian School of Economics, such as innovation, like there's any school of economics that doesn't emphasize innovation on some level, And is innovation particularly associated with the Austrian school? What was a strange thing to say? Creativity. like there's a school of economics that emphasizes stagnation. I mean, really, change. Like there's a school of economics that doesn't mention change, right? Entrepreneurship, private property, competition, pricing through open markets, individual choice, and market processes. Well, basically anybody could say that. He says, it has been an honor to hold the named positions established through the generosity of Sherlock Hibbs. Those of us who are current position holders look forward to fulfilling the stipulations associated with the position in Mr. Hibbs's will. And then they, all these faculty whose names I read to you, sign the letter, including I left out apparently a Karen A. Schnatterly. Remember the keynote address she gave at the Mises Institute? That sarcasm, by the way, if your sarcasm meter is low this morning, that was sarcasm. And then finally, I attest that all faculty members who were appointed to their respective positions have conducted themselves and carried out activities that are consistent with the stipulation of Mr. Hibbs's will. All right, well, that's a lie. It's an obvious lie. Just look at their work. But here's a fun thing that I got through Phil. This is an email from the man who at the time was the dean of the business school to all the professors who'd been endowed by the grantor, Sherlock Hibbs. This is what he writes. And when he says he's referring to the chancellor of the university, Chancellor Deaton. He says, he and I swallowed hard, and you may need to as well, about attesting to the dedicated and articulate disciple part. But he and I, and hopefully you, believe that using the exact wording from Mr. Hibbs's will, and then including the language from the offer letter to show what principles of the Austrian school are relevant to your positions, is the route we need to follow. If we don't deal with this stipulation directly, I believe we increase the likelihood of a challenge from Hillsdale College that the holders of these positions have not performed in accord with Mr. Hibbs's conditions. Remember, we're all working toward the same goal, namely approval of the report by first the curators and then Hillsdale College, both without publicity, use of much more of our time, and without a challenge by Hillsdale College and potential legal battle that would ensue from that. And also remember, these named positions are very beneficial to MU, the college, and most importantly, each of you. Whoa. Okay. So here's how we're going to obfuscate. And you better go along because, you're not going to have a job unless we keep this money. Oh, my goodness gracious. Now, let's anticipate what people might say here, people who aren't sympathetic to my view of the question, which is that this is obviously fraud. I mean, what else could this be? What other word would you use to refer to what's going on here other than fraud? So some people may say this kind of language about being a dedicated and articulate disciple of a particular person, this is not appropriate for a faculty search, to limit a faculty search in this way. But this is not by any means unusual. And again, at the time, you could certainly have voiced your opinion if you had been at the University of Missouri. And obviously, they at least professed to have no problem with that. We might point out as an example, as Phil does, that if this is some unusually ideological requirement in your view, remember Rutgers has a $3 million endowed Gloria Steinem chair. And there's a specific stipulation there that the holder of that chair has to engage in feminist political activism. And Phil goes on to point out, who holds that chair right now? Naomi Klein. She's never published once in a scholarly journal, peer-reviewed, and she doesn't even have an undergraduate degree. You think there's some ideology involved there? And then also, of course, we hear all the time from outraged leftists about conservative money in academia, you know, which is like one drop in the ocean compared to what happens on the left, where, of course, there's never any outrage that there might be money directed toward left-wing academic causes, which happens all the time. And, of course, it's an extreme minority that has non-leftist views in the universities these days, where it's just getting worse and worse and worse all the time. The idea that you'd be worried about right-wing money just goes to show the ideological conformity demanded by these people. These are the sort of people who, when you have 100 speakers come to campus and one of them is slightly different, has a slightly different take on the world, they want to shout that person down, shut down the speech. That's how totalitarian those people are. So yeah, a few measly dollars coming to support an alternative view, yeah, that is intolerable to them. even though they have money flowing in for all kinds of projects. I mean, even in economics departments, like you may say, well, yeah, I get that in women's studies or sociology, but economics we expect to be. Well, UMass Amherst, Bard College, the New School, all have progressive research programs that are supported by philanthropy and doesn't seem to have raised an eyebrow from anybody. Phil also points out that at least one of the faculty signatories on that letter attesting to being a dedicated and articulate disciple of Ludwig von Mises is an expert in the ethics of holding business executives accountable for acts of wrongdoing and misconduct. Well, that'll come in handy. So right now, this case is sitting in the Missouri court system, and who knows how long it's going to take before we get a result. But both sides are going to be fighting hard because you're dealing with $5 million. That was the original endowment. And then you have an additional accrued investment return of $4 million extra dollars that are being fought over. So this matters. And it looks to me, I don't see how Missouri has a leg to stand on. I had somebody in my private group say, I hope the language is not as slippery as I heard it was. I don't think this is slippery at all. I mean, I don't think, how hard would it be to determine if somebody is a dedicated and articulate disciple of Ludwig von Mises? Do you think you couldn't do that? I think we all could. I mean, for one thing, a dedicated and articulate disciple would mention Mises once per career, you know, at least. A dedicated and articulate disciple would mention the name of Mises at least once per career. And we can't find one reference to Mises across all their careers. So how interesting this is. I mean, we don't often have people with deep pockets in Austrian economics. I mean, in free market economics more generally, sure, you'll come across people from time to time with the means to do something like this. But it's so interesting to see people desperately pretending to belong to our tradition of thought. You know, it's not the normal, it's not the norm, right? I mean, most people are trying to run away from us. But, oh, sure, I'm a dedicated and articulate disciple of Ludwig von Mises because I believe in private property. I mean, what? Or at least I analyze, it doesn't even necessarily say they believe in private property. They analyze private property in their research. So that's where the story rests right now. And obviously, as this develops, and if we get an answer to this, however long it may take, I'm going to report on it to you. But it seems to me they've been caught red-handed. In what way have they lived up to the requirements? And it seems to me that if Hillsdale knows what it's doing and they can brief their lawyer on Austrian economics, he can make absolute mincemeat out of them. Absolute mincemeat out of them. I mean, in fact, not only would I explain the difference between the different schools of economic thought, show that none of these people are Austrians, none of them even mention Mises, which I think would be a red flag here. But I think I would also prepare some extremely elementary questions about Austrian economics or about the life of Mises, extremely elementary, and then pose them to anybody from the university on the stand. And if they can't answer any of them, what does that say? I mean, I think I'd have a blast doing this. I'd love to consult on this. Whoever you are out there, write to me. I'll help you out, okay? I got some things that'll make them squirm. So anyway, on the show notes page, I'm going to link to the article at AIER that Phil Magnus wrote about this if you want to get some more detail. And so that show notes page is tomwoods.com/1451. Now, remember, as I told you yesterday, next week on the Tom Woods Show is Scott Horton Week. Scott is joining us all week long, and it is going to be a blast. The first episode is going to deal with, as I said, where things stand right now in a bunch of countries to which the war on terror has spread. But then in the four episodes that follow, we will get into, instead of these short summaries, we'll get into much more detail about the current various places or various topics. And so I'm going to be opening this up to the folks in my supporting listeners group to get an idea. What would you like to hear during Scott Horton Week? We know that all we have to do is ask Scott a question and we're off to the races because his knowledge, he can't stop it from just pouring out. but I want to get some specifics from my supporting listeners. And if you're not in the Tom Woods Show elite and you enjoy this podcast, there's something weird. I don't know, can you live with that kind of cognitive dissonance for long without your brain exploding? So just head over to supportinglisteners.com. You will not believe all the gifts I give to people who support this show. I deeply appreciate it. Supportinglisteners.com is where you want to go, and you got to sign up there to get into the Tom Woods Show elite. And that's where I'm going to be. I get questions. A lot of times if I'll have particular guests on the show, I solicit questions from the supporters first. What do you guys want me to ask the guest? And a lot of people get their questions answered. So anyway, it's a fun group, smart people. If you're stumped on something having to do with libertarianism, you won't be for long because they will give you the answer. They're just top-notch people. So check that out at supportinglisteners.com and join me next week for Scott Horton Week. I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.